If you would, open up to Matthew chapter 10. Matthew chapter 10. I kind of wish we could kind of tag these last probably four verses on to last week's class, because really five. Because what we're going to get to in chapter 11, verse 1, to me is the culmination of seeing all these things that Jesus has instructed. If you remember back in earlier parts of Matthew chapter 10, it talks about how that Jesus calls the 12, that he gives them instruction before he's going to send them out. And you'll see kind of the bookends on that when we get to chapter 11, verse 1. But looking in Matthew chapter 10, look at verse 37. We want to look at this for a moment. It says, "He who loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me. He who loves son or daughter more than me is not worthy of me." And we talked about how that love word is a phileo word. It's a tender affection kind of word. It's what we would say in terms of to cherish, to draw near, to have great, even we even say warmth. But he who loves father and mother more than me is not worthy of me. And notice it's not, and you see this comparison aspect. He doesn't say you can't love your parents. He's saying, compared to the love that you need to have for me, if it's the same as me, you're not worthy of me. He says, unless I'm greater, where you'll listen to me more than them. He says, and really 100% me, not them, and if there's something different. He says, this is not worthy of me. You're not walking in a way that is worthy of who I am as your Lord. Then verse 38, "And he who does not take his cross and follow after me is not worthy of me." What if you won't bring the difficulties of your life to him? What if you won't still submit to what he desires, even in the midst of difficulties? He says, you're not worthy of me. And yet, those are the real challenging times, aren't they? Typically, we don't think, you know, everything's going great. This is really hard to serve the Lord. Sometimes in those moments, we can get distracted. But at the same time, to go, you know what? I can have this relationship with God. Everything's going great. And then the moment things start to get difficult and there's a cross to bear of going, okay, what am I going to have to bear? And then to go, I'm still going to walk worthy of him. Then you get to verse 39. And this is really the crux of it all. Verses 37 and 38 both. And even what goes before here where Jesus said, look, I didn't come to bring peace. I came to bring a sword. I came to pick a fight. He says, and you need to know that. And you're going out to pick a fight too. Now, it's not just to be offensive. It's the idea of going, are you going to hold to the things of God or are you not going to hold to the things of God? Then he comes to it to say, going to be a division in households, mother against daughter, father against daughter. Says mother-in-law, daughter-in-law, all these different relationships. A man's enemies will be the members of his own household. Then you get to verse 39. He who has found his life will lose it. And he who has lost his life for my sake will find it. The first time you read that statement, it really feels like a head scratcher. But then you notice, and we're going to look at this just a little bit more deeply, says, he who has found his life will lose it. You want to do things your way? You want to seek your own happiness? You want to find your own joy and your own peace? He says, you just need to know you're on your own. Now, realize we're getting kind of toward the end of this instruction that Jesus is giving his 12 before sending them out. Now, they have authority over unclean spirits and demons, every sickness, every disease. And he says, he who has found his life will lose it. If you still want to do this your way, he says, you're lost. Now, who in particular would that apply to with this group? Judas. But here's what's ironic. It's really all of them, isn't it? How many of them stayed true in conviction whenever Jesus is arrested? They all fled. They all left. Now, we can't say that like, I wouldn't have left. Yeah, right. Let's be genuine. But going, here it was exactly the way that Scripture had prophesied it would happen. It says, he who has found his life will lose it. And he's telling them this up front. And then comes this next statement, and he who has lost his life for my sake will find it. What if you were going to lose yourself but find me in terms of Jesus? He says, what have you really found? You found life. Now, I want to show you this picture, maybe in a more broad spectrum that kind of fills in a lot more blanks. Look over at the Gospel of John. Look at John chapter 12. John chapter 12. Look at verse 23. And know that these verses come, whether it's just a day or a few days before Jesus is going to be killed. You see an attitude within him. John chapter 12, verse 23. And Jesus answered them, saying, the hour has come for the Son of Man to be glorified. Now, doesn't this just sound wonderful? It's time for the Son of Man to be glorified. He says, you're really going to see my glory. And if you didn't know what's coming next, you would think, what is this going to be? This is going to be awesome. Then, verse 24. Truly, truly, I say to you, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. But if it dies, it bears much fruit. Now, I want you to really wrap your mind around this. Agriculture again. He says, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. How many amber waves of grain have you seen in your life, just waving out in the field? And they stay by themselves as long as they're alive. But whenever they die, what happens to those heads of grain? They fall off of, I'm going to call it a stalk, it's probably not it. But just, they fall off into the ground, they die. And then what happens to those little grains as they dry out? They get pushed down into the soil. Right? They get buried. And then, all of a sudden, here's everything that's provided. And then they grow up. And now there's not just one by itself. Now there's a few by themselves. And then they grow up. And they die. And all of a sudden, there's more and more until it takes over a whole field. On a different plane, maybe you've driven across Kansas and you see these huge fields of sunflower seeds. Sunflowers. And you go, wow. And sometimes we think, oh, somebody just planted those. You realize those same things can happen all just because of how God does things. They die, those seeds dry out, they get down in the ground. He says, all of a sudden the rains come and the sun comes and through the winter everything gets covered over. Then you see it grow up. Now, here's his picture with Jesus. He says, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. As long as you want to do things your way, how will you always feel? Alone. So many times people wonder why it's such a humongous thing nowadays where people feel so alone, and yet they can be in the midst of a humongous crowd of people. And the reason the case is, I haven't died to myself yet. I'm still just living alone. Now, it doesn't mean people don't care for you. It just means that's the way it feels on the inside. Now, here's the solution. He says, unless a grain of wheat falls into the earth and dies, it remains alone. He says, but if it dies, it bears much fruit. He says, but whenever that grain of wheat dies, and it falls down into the ground and gets buried, now it can grow up. What do you think Jesus is really talking about? Death, burial, resurrection. Now, notice too, same principles, but notice what he applies here. Verse 25. He who loves his life, what? Loses it. I want to do it my way. I love my life. My life's so great. He says, but what's going to turn out in the end? Not going to be so great. Lose it. He who hates his life in this world, I don't want to do it my way. I want to do it the Lord's way, God's way. He says, he who hates his life in this world will keep it to life eternal. Now think about Jesus. You know the garden's coming up for him. And what's he going to ask God? Will he let this cup of wrath pass? But then what does he resign himself to do? Not my will, but your will be done. And what does he find? Do you notice the connection that he has even while he's being crucified? How many times he says, Father? Multiple times. What does he know? Is he in this all by himself? No, he's not. He understands this. I'm not alone because I'm going to do his will. Now, even bearing himself up as a sin offering. But notice he says, hates his life in this world. And he's kind of referring back to the 12 here who are listening. Then verse 26, if anyone serves me, he must follow me. He says, if you're going to serve me, that means you follow me and not yourself. He says, and where I am, there my servant will be also. He says, and you can come with me. Isn't that what we want? Do you want to go with Jesus? And I want you to think about this. Do you want to go with Jesus as you die to self now and live with him now? Do you want to go with Jesus whenever you die physically? Do you want to go with Jesus whenever we're raised to be with him? And even after death to go be with him? What does this all hinge on? Dying to self. Now, notice the next part in verse 26 is, if anyone serves me, the Father will honor him. Now, do you remember earlier in Matthew 10, you confess me before men, and I will confess you before my Father. You deny me before men, and I will deny you before my Father. And what's that all based upon? Are you going to die to yourself? And who can you imitate in that? I can do it like Jesus. I can be like him. Otherwise, I'm just going to feel all alone. Now, come back over to Matthew chapter 10. So you see here in verse 39, it says, he who has found his life will lose it. Oh, you want to do it your way, huh? Keep in mind, he's giving them all this instruction about who they're to go preach to, what they're to preach and say, how they're going to have to be shrewd and wise and be innocent at the same time, how this is going to cause a division maybe within their own homes, among their own loved ones. And he says, and you have to remember, I care for you. I know the number of hairs that are on your head. And he says, do you love me? Are you ready to die to what you want to do? Now, he sends them off to these places here in a minute, but I want you to look at verse 40. Matthew 10, verse 40. He who receives you receives me. And he who receives me receives him who sent me. Now, the apostles are getting ready to go out and preach and teach. So if people receive what the apostles are saying, who are they also receiving? Jesus. And if they're receiving Jesus, who else are they receiving? God. The Father. Now, here's something else to really kind of consider. What should this tell us about the writings of the apostles? They're inspired? Make an application here. Right. If I'm going to receive, and you think about the New Testament, how many books in the New Testament are written by apostles? Of going, if I receive what they say, I'm receiving Jesus. If I receive what they say, I am receiving the one who sent Jesus and God the Father. Is that really the way we see these New Testament books? Yet you see so many people go, well, you know, they just didn't understand these things. They're just stories. They're just cultural things you really don't need to hold to. You're going, who are we really going after when we start to think that way? ourselves. And how are we going to remain? Alone. Alone. You can't chop up the New Testament and go in, out, don't like that, like this. What are we doing? We're pushing Jesus aside. Now, because there are certainly some difficult things that Jesus says, but you have to go, am I going to die to myself and live to God, or am I just going to die? Now, look at what else he brings up here. He who receives you receives me. He who receives me receives him who sent me. And that word for sent is where we get our English word apostle. And if you remember in Hebrews chapter 3, verse 1, it talks about Jesus being an apostle. He was sent by God. These 12 are being sent by who? Jesus. Now, it's not as if that's a vast difference, because Jesus is God. God the Father is God. But just want you to realize, when he's talking about receives him who sent me, I came because I was sent. So if you want to know how to be a great apostle, who should you be looking at? Jesus. Jesus. Verse 41. He who receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. And he who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. So now you start to see these aspects. I don't want to chase these too far, but look over at Matthew chapter 13. Look down at verse 57. Matthew 13:57. What does Jesus call himself? A prophet. He says, they took offense at him. He's in his own hometown. He says, but Jesus said to them, a prophet is not without honor except in his hometown and in his own households. You know what it's like to have a household that's divided? He does. And so he says, I get rejected because I'm a prophet. He says, I understand that. Now, you start to kind of look your way through this. Did other people know that Jesus was a prophet? Look over at Matthew 21. Look down at verse 11. This is after Jesus' triumphant entry into Jerusalem, riding on a donkey. Verse 11. And the crowds were saying, this is the prophet, Jesus, from Nazareth in Galilee. Jesus calls himself a prophet. The crowds call him a prophet. Look down at verse 46 in Matthew 21. Actually, look at 45 and 46. When the chief priests and the Pharisees heard his parables, they understood that he was speaking about them. And he wasn't talking real highly of them either, because he's speaking the truth. Verse 46, when they sought to seize him, they feared the people because they considered him to be a prophet. It was so widely known that the people thought of Jesus as a prophet that it even scared these religious leaders, like, well, we can't really take him because the people hate us, because they consider Jesus to be a prophet. Because it was true. That's why. So, then later on in chapter 23, Jesus even talks about how that the prophets are going to be killed. What does Jesus know is coming for him? The same. He's going to be killed too. Then, as you start to kind of work your way through and think about this, thinking about what's in Matthew 10, verse 41, he says, he who receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. Any New Testament prophets that we know of? John the Baptist is one. We'll talk about him here in just a second. There's a man by the name of Agabus in the book of Acts. He's a prophet. Acts 13 talks about some other men that were prophets. And who are the prophets supposed to be looking at on how to be a prophet? Jesus. He says, so he who receives a prophet in the name of a prophet shall receive a prophet's reward. So, if you listen to the words of Agabus, he says, what kind of reward will you get? You'll get this reward that Jesus is talking about. Because Jesus is the prophet who sent Agabus. And you go, oh, okay. And then the next aspect in verse 41 that he says, and he who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. Is Jesus righteous? through and through. Purity. Now, also, if you start to kind of put these pieces together, real quickly, John 21, verse 32. I'll show you another one. Don't worry, we're going to settle down here in a minute. Matthew 21, look down at verse 32. John the Baptist, as they were talking about. Matthew chapter 21 is where we're at. Sorry, Heather. I'll try to be more distinct. Thank you for saying something. John chapter 21. I tried to keep most of these in Matthew so that it's... Matthew 21. We're talking about John. We're in Matthew 21. I tried to keep most of these references in Matthew so that we didn't have to go so far. Matthew 21, verse 32. And Jesus is talking to the chief priests and the elders who interrupted his class at the temple. If you look back, so you know. He says, for John came to you in the way of righteousness, and you did not believe him. But the tax collectors and prostitutes did believe him. And you, seeing this, did not even feel remorse afterwards so as to believe him. What's Jesus saying about John? He's a righteous man. And if you notice it here, he says, he came to you, talking to the chief priests and the elders. He says, he came to you in the way of righteousness, and you did not believe. He says, but the tax collectors and prostitutes did. Interesting. They were willing to die to themselves, but you aren't. Then he says, and you, even though after you saw this, he says, you did not even feel remorse afterwards so as to believe him. And you still didn't change. You're still just a grain of wheat doing your own thing. He says, you don't have any relationship with me. Now, just so you see what's here. Now, come back to Matthew chapter 10. So in verse 41, he says, he who receives a righteous man in the name of a righteous man shall receive a righteous man's reward. So what if you listen to the words of John? Who sent that righteous man? God did. And you go, if you listen to John, what was he going to bring you? Who would he take you to? Someone coming after me who's greater than me. I'm not even worthy to untie his sandals. You need to listen to him. And you go, he says, if you're going to listen to a righteous man, the name of a righteous man, he says, no, you'll receive a righteous man's reward. You will receive of the same because you are going to be tied to the same person in Jesus. You'll be tied to the same God as Jesus. Jesus, the one who was sent, Jesus, the righteous man, and Jesus, the prophet. And you realize he's more than that, but that's where he kind of leaves this for them in the moment. Then, verse 42, he says, Matthew chapter 10, verse 42, he says, and whoever in the name of a disciple gives to one of these little ones even a cup of cold water to drink, truly I say to you, he shall not lose his reward. In other words, will you lose your reward for helping somebody? No. Will you lose your reward for showing someone grace? No. Did Jesus show people grace who never responded to do what was right? Oftentimes. Even people who just showed up to see the signs and came for the free meals, he still shows them grace. It didn't mean that they had salvation. There were even people who Jesus gave instruction to. Maybe you think about the leper who came, says, I want to be healed. If you're willing, you can cleanse me. And sure enough, Jesus does cleanse him. And Jesus knows what's coming next. And he warns him and he tells him, don't tell anyone. And sure enough, what does he go out and do? He is just tells it all over the place. Jesus already knows. But you see Jesus respond out of grace in those moments. He says, you won't lose your reward. He says, he doesn't say you're going to gain a reward. He just says you're not going to lose your reward. You won't forfeit it. Sometimes we wonder about, how's this going to turn out? And you go, look, just be concerned about how you're going to use what you have, what you've been given by God. Here's another aspect of this. If you notice specifically, it says these little ones. Who's he referring to? What would you guess? Children. I'll let you kind of hammer this one out on your own. Matthew only uses this phrase, little ones, about four or five times in his gospel. Three of them are in Matthew chapter 18, where it specifically is describing children. And they go, so what if you're going to help a child? He says, what if you give him a cold cup of water? You going to lose your award? No. Even if they're rotten, disgusting kids, there are some of those out there. You need to know that. Not all of them are really kind. He says, but you go, will you lose your reward for showing grace? No. You think of how often Jesus used children to illustrate his points about humility. That's what Matthew 18 is all about. You want to be greatest in the kingdom? How about you just be humble enough to listen for the voice of Jesus and obey it when you hear it? He says, you'll be greatest in the kingdom. That's all it takes. Makes it sound really simple, doesn't it? Because it really is. Now, here in verse 42, whoever in the name of a disciple gives to one of these little ones even a cup of cold water to drink, truly I say to you, anything but, I could not be more clear here. Truly I say to you, he shall not lose his reward. And then you get to chapter 11, and look at the very first verse. Think of all the things that Jesus has told them and instructed them. And I kind of wonder, if it was me, I wish 11:1 was really 10:43. I wish it kind of fit into the tail end of chapter 10, because it seems to kind of fit there better. But I can understand. Then, chapter 11, verse 1. When Jesus had finished giving instructions to his 12 disciples, so that tells you, there's your bookends. You know when the instruction began back in Matthew chapter 10, is it verse 5? Verse 5, sending out us, instructing them. Sent out, being apostle, idea again. You come here, he says, all right, now I've finished giving you the instruction. What's it time to do? Time for you to go. I've given you the instruction. But notice that's not the way he ends it. Look at what he says. And this is marvelous. When Jesus had finished giving instructions to his 12 disciples, he departed from there to teach and preach in their cities. Think about what he's just told them. I'm coming to bring a sword. I'm going to divide households. And you think for any of those men who loved their mom or their dad who was still living to go, oh no, what's going to happen? I wish my parents had a chance to encounter Jesus. If anybody thought that, Jesus is one step ahead of them. He says, because you notice specifically it says he's going to their cities. Are their families going to be given opportunity if they still live in their cities? It's amazing to think that whenever someone is converted to Christ to become a disciple, and if you notice here in chapter 11, verse 1, it does call them disciples. Back in chapter 10 is the one and only time that the word apostles used in Gospel of Matthew, to be translated that way. So he says, to think, all of a sudden, whenever we became disciples, who is Jesus looking at next? Families. Now, maybe I'm going a little bit out on a limb here, but that's what he does. And to think for Peter, Andrew, James, and John, and Bartholomew, and Thaddeus, and even Judas, here is Jesus going out to their cities to preach and teach. And you go, isn't that what you pray for whenever we were converted? Jesus, would you talk to my brother? Would you talk to my sister? Would you talk to my mom, my dad, my aunt and uncle? And you see these things, and Jesus responds that way. And he knows what it's like to come from a house that's divided. His brothers don't think he's the Messiah. They're not all sold on that idea yet. But you see what's at hand here. And you see the heart of Jesus at work. Now, The next little passage, and maybe we'll only get through verses like 2 through 6. But all of a sudden, you kind of get a little bit of a change of scenery. Jesus is going out to preach and teach in these cities of the 12. And they're getting sent out to go preach and teach to all these different cities of Israel, not going to Samaria, not going to the Gentiles at this point. And they're on their way. And then now you come here to verse 2. Now when John, and which John is this? John the Baptist. I remember one time seeing somebody say John T. period Baptist. I thought, okay, I get it. But now when John, while imprisoned, heard of the works of Christ, he sent word by his disciples and said to him, are you the expected one, or shall we look for someone else? Now, if you just read these two verses, how do you feel about the conviction of John the Baptist about who Jesus is? It feels a little puzzling, doesn't it? Now, I'm going to go ahead and give it away because we're probably not going to get that far today. But in verses 7 through 15, Jesus is going to go out of his way to tell you about how wonderful of a job John the Baptist did and what he was sent to do. And he's going to even make a statement. Among all those who are born of women, there is no one greater than John. But the one who is least in the kingdom is greater than John. So, make sure you see this in the right context. What you see John doing, what was John's mission for his disciples? What did he want them to do? He wanted them to repent, to look to God for instruction, and to be looking for who? The Messiah. There's one coming after me who is greater than me. I'm not even worthy to untie his sandal. He says, he is the one you should serve. And I love the statement. It's such a beautiful statement of what John says in the Gospel of John the Baptist says in the Gospel of John. He says, in talking about Jesus, he must increase, but I must decrease. You talk about a mission statement for us. Less of me and all of him. And that's exactly what we need. And John had figured that out in a marvelous way. So here, it says, when John the Baptist, he says he's imprisoned, he's already in jail, and he's not going to leave that place alive. Here he is in prison. He hears about the works of what Jesus is doing. He's getting word of this. I mean, it's not as if these jails are, you know, 1,000 feet away from a public encountering. But here he is, and he hears about the works of Jesus, and he still has these disciples. Now, Luke 7:19 points out that it's two disciples. It gives you a number. He says there's two of them. And he says, all of a sudden here they are, and he sent word by his disciples. Two of them, who are still seemingly in great contact with John, right? He's able to say, hey, go to Jesus and ask him this question. Now, remember what John's purpose is? I want to point you to Jesus. He's the one you should follow. You ever had people who hold a little too tightly to you? They're a little too devoted to you? In terms of, here's John the Baptist, have these two disciples, they will not leave me. What does John want for them? I want you to be with Jesus. Isn't that something? It's the same kind of statement maybe that parents make whenever your children say, oh, I love you. You say, I want you to love Jesus more. I'm not the one I want you to love. I want you to love him. And you go, here's John's response. I want you to see Jesus. And John knows about the wisdom of Jesus. He just says, if I can just get them to talk to Jesus, Jesus will take care of the rest. Is that the way we think about with our own families? If I can just get them to Jesus, Jesus can take care of the rest. As opposed to trying to iron out every detail. Now, notice what's here. He says, he heard of the works of Christ. He heard what Jesus is doing. He sent word by his disciples and said to him, so who's making the statement? The disciples, these two disciples. Are you the expected one, or shall we look for someone else? Are you the one who's coming? We would say, are you the Messiah? Are you the Christ? He says, are you the expected one? And notice, John posed the question this way on purpose. He says, you just ask him if he's the expected one, or should we look for somebody else? Now, John already knows the answer. He certainly does. And so, he says, should we look for someone else? Verse 4. Jesus answered and said to them, here's these two disciples again, go and report to John what you hear and see. Now, I know there's more to his statement, but let's just stop there for a second. If someone has sent you to get a report and to come back, and the person that you encounter says, well, go tell them what you hear and see, what does that require of you? I'm going to have to stop and think, what am I seeing and what am I hearing? Now, when Luke tells this story, along with Mark a little bit, it talks about how that Jesus had just done some miracles. It's like they walked into the midst of this situation that's going on, and you go, look at the timing of it all. Look at what God worked out. John just wanted these two disciples to really encounter Jesus, and all of a sudden, here they walk into this perfect scenario. Who works that out? God, can we orchestrate that? I hope we don't think so, because don't try. And so here's the situation. And Jesus tells them, go and report to John what you hear and see. Take a moment, look around. Let your ears hear and let your eyes see. Huh, Jesus ever talk like that? He who has ears to hear, let him hear. He says, with your eyes so you can see. He says, just take it in. And then he goes ahead and gives them a little bit more. But he says, you need to see this for yourself, which is something, because if you read John chapter 1, how many times your statement, come and see. Is this really going to be the Messiah? Come and see. Is he really the one? Come and see. You have to see him for yourself, because you wouldn't believe me anyway if I told you. Then, it goes on into verse 5. The blind receive sight, and the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, and the deaf hear. The dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. How would that be for sight? And in order to really take that in, you would have to notice that they came to Jesus blind, but how did they leave? When they may have come to Jesus lame, but how are they leaving? They may have come to Jesus as a leper, but how are they going? You may have been there to see someone dead. And all of a sudden, what are they doing now? They're raised from the dead, right? And then he throws in this one. This one doesn't seem so miraculous, but maybe it really is. The poor have the gospel preached to them. Who are the people that nobody cared for? The poor, the blind, the lepers, the lame. Not with Jesus. He can even teach the dead that have been raised. Now think about that. Is this the expected one, or should we expect somebody else? What's Jesus answering for them? I'm the one. But you're going to have to discover it in your heart. Are you going to listen? Are you going to look? Now, real quick, turn back to Isaiah chapter 35. There's a major point we need to get to. Isaiah 35, we had an extra 3 minutes, we'd go through probably the whole chapter in a little bit more detail. But I want you to notice verse 1. It says, the wilderness and the desert will be glad, and the arabah will rejoice and blossom like the crocus. Maybe you're not familiar with crocus, but the idea is, typically in the wilderness and in the desert, do you think about things blossoming out and really, being really beautiful? Probably not. Verse 2. It will blossom profusely and rejoice with rejoicing and shout of joy. The glory of Lebanon will be given to it. The majesty of Carmel and Sharon. Jesus, Rose of Sharon, bloom within. I think you've heard that. He says, they will see the glory of the Lord, the majesty of our God. They're going to see His glory. Let's see, what was it just talking about in chapter 10? About the glory of God? About who Jesus is? Then, verse 3, encourage the exhausted, strengthen the feeble. Oh, you mean you're looking out for the weak? Those who are seen as insignificant? Then, verse 4, say to those with anxious heart, take courage, fear not. Behold, your God will come with vengeance. The recompense of God will come, but He will save you. The outcast, the overlooked, they'll be saved. If they'll turn to faith, verse 5, then the eyes of the blind will be opened, and the ears of the deaf will be unstopped. Then the lame will leap like a deer, and the tongue of the mute will shout for joy, for waters will break forth in the wilderness and streams in the arabah. He says, look at the beauty of God. He can take this wilderness and turn it into a garden. He'll take the people who are offcast, and all of a sudden, they'll grow up like these beautiful flowers. He'll provide the water. He'll provide the nutrients and the sunlight. Everything together. This is the glory of the Lord. Look at where He took us out of. And look at where we are now in Christ. Now, He goes on. We'll read through it real quick. Verse 7. The scorched land will become a pool, and the thirsty ground springs of water, and the haunt of jackals its resting place. Grass becomes reeds and rushes. A highway will be there, a roadway, and it will be called the Highway of Holiness. Oh, Jesus! The unclean will not travel on it, but it will be for him who walks that way, and fools will not wander on it. No lion will be there, nor will any vicious beast go up on it. These will not be found there, but the redeemed will walk there. This is a place for only those who have been bought back by the blood of Christ. Do you know that you can preach Jesus out of Isaiah? It's kind of easy sometimes. Verse 10, and the ransomed of the Lord will return. Oh, they've been bought back. And come with joyful shouting to Zion, with everlasting joy upon their heads. They will find gladness and joy. They sound like they're all by themselves and alone. Not at all. And sorrow and sighing will flee away. Ah, oh, what a refreshing place to be. Now look over to Isaiah chapter 61. Three more verses and we'll make the big point. Isaiah 61 verses 1 through 3. The Spirit of the Lord God is upon me, because the Lord has anointed me to bring good news to the afflicted. Do you remember when Jesus quoted this? Do you remember where he was? He was in Nazareth. He reads out of Isaiah. You remember they handed him the scroll and he turned to the place of what we now know of as Isaiah 61. And he said, the Spirit of the Lord is upon me. And in the previous chapter in Luke, Jesus had been baptized. Well, actually 2 chapters before. Oh, what descended upon him? Spirit of the Lord. He says, because the Lord has anointed me to bring the good news to the afflicted. You mean I'm going to bring the gospel to the poor, the broken, the outcast, the downtrodden, the weary? Yes. He has sent me to bind up the brokenhearted, to proclaim liberty to captives, freedom, and freedom to prisoners. Verse 2, to proclaim the favorable year of the Lord. This is about Jubilee. He says, and the day of vengeance of our God. Oh, but what's coming? A judgment. To comfort all who mourn. Let's see, blessed are those who mourn, for they will be comforted. He says, to grant those who mourn in Zion, giving them a garland instead of ashes. What's our background before we came to Christ? Life on the trash heap that was on fire. And look at where we are now in Jesus. We have this wonderful place to be in Christ. Well fed, taken care of in terms of spiritual things as well as the physical. Giving them a garland instead of ashes. The oil of gladness instead of mourning. What's this oil about again? This is gladness. A little gladness instead of mourning. The mantle of praise instead of a spirit of fainting. So they will be called oaks of righteousness. If you receive a righteous man in the name of a righteous man, what will you receive? A righteous man's reward. Then, he says, the planting of the Lord, that he may be glorified. Where we're at is not to glorify us. It's to glorify him. Now, real quickly, Matthew chapter 10. Let's make this final point. So Jesus tells these two disciples of John, and John's done a wonderful job, but he's got a couple of reluctant disciples. Jesus says, go and report to John what you hear and see. Take it in. The blind receive sight, the lame walk, the lepers are cleansed, the deaf hear, the dead are raised up, and the poor have the gospel preached to them. And then comes this little caveat. And blessed is he who does not take offense at me. Now there's a little message in here for John. Jesus has all this capability and all this power. He can heal the deaf, the lame, the leper. He can raise the dead. He looks out for those who are overlooked. And where is John? In prison. And what's going to happen to John while being in prison? He's going to be killed. Now the quotation of these verses that we read out of Isaiah 35 and Isaiah 61 talk about Jesus setting the captives free. Is John going to be set free? Not from this prison alive. But what is he going to be? The best of any boy that's been born of a woman. But those who are least in the kingdom are greater than John. Is it easy to get offended by God, by Jesus, whenever we don't get what we want? Now, here's John in prison. He's going to die in there. He's going to die in there for speaking the truth about Herod, and he shouldn't be married to his brother's wife. And they're going to pull this little scheme with a dancing girl. And then she's going to have to, after being told, you can have up to half the kingdom. She's going to go to her dear mother, wicked mother. Say, what should I ask for? You wonder, out of all the things that she could have asked for. Says, ask for the head of John the Baptist. I'm tired of listening to that junk. That's my paraphrase. And sure enough, the daughter honors her mother. And takes the word back. And Herod, even though he does not want to put John to death, will have him put to death. And we'll read that story later on in Matthew 14, verse 10, about him being beheaded. But for John, he has done what he was sent to do in a marvelous way. But that does not mean he's going to get out of prison alive. This is something we really need to take to heart. And I mean, we really need to think about this. This word for blessed is the same word that's back in the Beatitudes. It's favor from God with longevity as long as you will not be offended at what God does in your life. you know the situations that we often encounter. We pray about them often. We pray about the physical things. We might should pray more about the spiritual. We're praying for things like, John, God, I want John to be let out of prison. What's God saying? No. John has fulfilled his mission, and he will die there, and my son will be known to take the good news to the poor, and that all will come to know him. So often our sight of what we want, you start changing the way you pray about things. All of a sudden we have someone who's older in our lives, seen many days, and you think, here they are in their 80s, 90s, and you go, can we pray that they've just fulfilled their mission? Can we be thankful as opposed to saying, please let them get over this cancer? Will we be willing to put it in God's hands and to not be offended if he doesn't give us what we want? Because so often, who's the one who needs to die? It's us. Because as long as that grain of wheat is there by itself, it remains alone. And whenever the time comes, we have some terrible health concern that we start to wonder, I may not survive this. Can you not be offended by that? Can you not be offended that God's not going to give us what we want? That we trust the wisdom of God. The number of days is already ordained before we were born. Can we be content with that? Sometimes it's especially hard. I can tell you this, as I'm sure many of you have gone through similar things. I thought about Lena, what she shared. When your children get sick, can you put them in the hands of God and be content? Can you hand them over to think, if they die before I do, I will not be offended by this. I will bear my cross, and I will follow closely to him because he bore my cross on his. He paid to set me free, just like he paid for you, and for give opportunity to every soul to walk this earth. Verse 6 is for John. And Jesus understands where John is. And he knows the message that John needs to hear. And he knows that John, I think, he knows that John will hear it in faith and go, I don't have to put up a fight to get out of here. I'm content. And you realize that verse by itself is so wonderful and such a beautiful freedom that whenever you trust God, what do you find? Peace. Perfect peace. Can I trust him through this? And to lay it down at his feet. And to go, your wisdom is so far superior to mine. And your plan is so much greater than my own. I give it to you. And I offer it to you. Next week when we come back, you'll see the way Jesus talks about John, so that you don't ever think that John sent those disciples to ask that question, because that's what he was thinking. You can easily see how these things all tie together. All right. Have a great week.